Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Pamela Brewer welcoming you to this edition of Transitions Tuesday. This is the day when you and I get to learn much more about the experience of transitions in our lives. And as we know, transitions occur in every single part of our life. Today's conversation is with Dr. Jimmy Holland, who, with her colleague, Dr. Mindy Greenstein, has written a book entitled Lighter as We Go: Virtues, Character, Strengths, and Aging. Dr. Jimmy Holland, welcome to Mind Talk.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be with you, Pamela.
Now, Dr. Holland, you and your colleague have written a book about aging, and something tells me this is something you have some personal awareness of.
Well, you know, when you get older, you get very interested in aging, interestingly enough. And so I'm at 88. I've really had a wonderful opportunity over the last 10 years or so to look more at older people as part of my day job, which is talking with patients with cancer about illness and helping them to adjust to it. My background is psychiatry, mental health, and we were able at Memorial Sloan Kettering about 30 years ago to start these kind of services for patients who had cancer. So I've had a long experience with talking with people who are medically ill, and now I've gotten more interested in kind of how do people cope and how do they deal with this idea that nobody wants to get old and everybody's afraid of aging. What are those things doing in our society and doing with people? So transitions is what it's all about. Pamela.
Absolutely. And let me just let the audience know, you are in fact the Wayne E. Chapman Chair in Psychiatric Oncology. You are an attending psychiatrist with the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York. So You indeed are a very busy young 88-year-old person.
Well, somebody would call me a pioneer. I'm also called the mother of psycho-oncology, the mother, because we were the first cancer hospital here at Memorial Sloan Kettering to really integrate the idea that psychiatry and psychology and mental health were an important area in the care of patients with cancer. Up to that point, 1977, there were no psychiatric services available, essentially, in cancer hospitals. So we were able to start something at this hospital that had ripple effects all around the country and around the world. So I'm very happy to look around and see what's happened in the last few years, recognizing that psychological issues really are terribly important in helping people adhere to their treatments, have a better quality of life. And so that's accepted now, and I'm very pleased about that.
It's accepted indeed, and it's almost shocking to hear that there were no real services available up until the 70s for someone dealing with a potentially scary chronic
That's right.
illness like cancer. It's just extraordinary.
Pretty amazing. There were the social workers were there, and they were sort of front line, but again, they were not mental health related directly, and nurses were very good too. So I think there was a lot. But my husband was a pioneer in chemotherapy, and he's an oncologist, and I used to talk to his group about their research, and they said, you know, we're too busy to think about this. We've got to try help to cure this disease, and then when we can cure everybody, they won't have these emotional problems. So I would say that's very interesting, but you've got to be doing something for all the people who are ill right now. That kind of came out of years of talking about it and working with the primary leaders in oncology over a period back in the 70s and 80s, where we had a big cooperative group, and we were able to develop a committee that looked at the quality of life of patients. That's what we called it then, to get it through, but it was really the psychological problems.
You know, I have to say, you and your husband clearly have made such a tremendously important impact on the field.
It's been a great run, and we've been very fortunate to be a part of it and to see things change in a very positive way that they have. So things are much better. It's easier to have cancer today than it was 40 years ago, when, you remember, at that time we didn't even give people their diagnosis. It was considered too cruel to tell somebody they had cancer. They might give up, so-called. So we used to talk about the big C, and we used to use different words, but wouldn't use the word cancer. So, and we didn't talk about with people about death or about their illness. So we've come a long way, Pam.
A very long way. And let me quote you by saying, at the beginning of your book, I'm going to quote a quote that you offered from Linda Freed, who's the dean of the Columbia School of Public Health.
Right.
She said that older adults constitute the only increasing natural resource in the entire world. That's such an interesting way to think about it, because, as you know, at this point in our society, if you're over 21, they're selling you wrinkle cream.
Absolutely. Well, our society just worships and idolizes youth. And if you're not youthful and trying to stay youthful, somehow you might as well be out in the pasture and just nibbling your grass. So things, I think that these concepts in our society are part of the reason Mindy and I wrote the book, was that we felt like we ought to, if we could make some kind of impact on the stigma that's attached to aging, and because there's this idea in society that getting old is bad. You know, we're all getting older every day, and hopefully we'll live long enough to have an old age. But the fear of it, you know, 20-year-olds fear being 30, 30-year-olds fear being 40, and so on it goes. So I think that we have to somehow dispel these ideas and these negative myths that we have about aging that aren't really true. I'm having a great time. You know, yes, we're subject to more illnesses when we're older, but there are a lot of benefits for being older, too. You have a little more time to smell the roses, to think about your relationships, and, well, I won't be here forever. Am I doing what's really the best use of my time? These kinds of things become part of what I would call the wisdom of aging, of really being able to be more thoughtful about relationships with people, trying to make sure we're doing the best we can for the next generations, because we're not going to be here so terribly long. So this is kind of reconciling, I think, with the fact that we are finite. But I think that the bottom line, Pamela, is that we are quite aging with death. And young people fear death, and they don't want to hear about it. They don't want to talk about it. And old people bring up the topic just looking at them, saying, oh, my God, I might look like that one day. And I think that's frightening. And that accounts, I believe, down deep for why we have such a lot of myths and negative feelings about aging.
Well, and you say, again, very early on in your book, that according to the research, having a negative attitude about aging when you're young is actually associated with poorer health when you are older. So, again, we are a society sort of creating our own ill health.
Well, that's very interesting. I had trouble believing that, but I think the issue is that if you have a positive attitude, you're more apt to have better health habits when you're young, and it's pretty clear if you know don't drink or smoke too much or become obese and don't exercise. These are all health habits that you start when you're young. They do create chronic illnesses much earlier, later in life. So people who are mindful of their good health and keeping it have a better outcome when they're older. It's fascinating, but the data are there. There's also good data that if you have a sense, as you get older, of having a purpose and a some kind of thing that really turns you on, that you really feels important to participate in. It could be grandkids, could be politics, could be anything. But people who have that kind of continuing active involvement appear to delay the onset of cognitive problems, and they have fewer chronic illnesses. So there's good attitudes are much more important than we might have thought back in earlier days. One of the reasons I got into this was this idea we should be able to change the stigma around and that this must be a modern issue. Well, it turns out, if you look back, there's a wonderful essay from 44 BC by Cicero describing things in the Roman world and going back to the Greek world. And he outlines in this essay on old age, he outlines exactly the same attitudes that we have today, which is amazing. He could have written this in the New York Times yesterday, of saying, you know, they think you don't know enough to participate in the forum in the government anymore. They think you might as well be out to put out someplace and left to graze because of their age. And then he goes through things that he does to keep his memory active. He goes to bed at night, thinks through all the people he's seen and their parents and grandparents' names. Wonderful exercises, just like that we do today. You don't eat too much, don't drink too much, sex not too much anymore when you're older. That's just as well. Anyway, so my point is, this is not new. The stigma we have in our society has been around. If you look back in old newspapers, people are trying to get rid of their wrinkles for eons. So the fears of aging, I think, are this fear of death. And so it's not entirely new, though I think our society seems to make a fetish of it.
Oh, well, indeed. I mean, we take it to a whole new level, I think, in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
One of the issues that you raise in the book, which, by the way, I have to comment on the look of the book. It's got a sort of a turquoise cover, and the title looks like it's handwritten, and it just seems, it has the look of being an easy thing to read and to incorporate in your life.
I think that's true, and we called it lighter as we go because, you know, if we begin to, as we get older, if we drop some of our psychological baggage, we carry around a lot of baggage about problems in the past, beliefs, attitudes. If we begin to drop those and let go of them, then we travel a little lighter. And so we call the book Lighter as We Go because it's better that one kind of dispenses with some of the long-held problems you've held on to. You just don't help anymore.
And lighter is definitely better.
Definitely better.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the changing ways in which we tend to identify ourselves over time. You know, 20-year-olds tend to see themselves in a certain way. By the time you're 40 or 50, you've got a whole different view.
Well, I think this is very important for the public to know about, and people don't know it. This is new research that's come out in the last 15 or so years, and it comes from the economics of the world, not from psychological world. And so there's a man named Kahneman who's studied how people make decisions about economic and about stocks and that kind of thing. But the background was that countries began, particularly in Europe, to look at how could the government and how could policies be brought forward that would make people's lives better. I think Europe's been faster at doing that than we have. But they began to collect data on things like what's your sense of well-being right now on a scale of 0 to 10. And so they would give this to, like, you know, 500,000 people. That's a big study. And so they did this in England, France, actually some in the developing world. And then there's been one study, a big study here in the U.S. And the fascinating thing is they began to look at these data across the countries, and they found a pattern that followed what decade you were in terms of where you thought your level of well-being was. And so the young people, 18 to 21 or so, scored high on the scale. They would say 6 to 8, somewhere in that range. Yes, and the you know, kids at that age, life's a bowl of cherries. I'm going to live forever. Things are pretty darn good when you're in your 20s. You think they're going to stay that way. The fascinating thing is that as you go by decade through the 30s, 40s, and get down to about 55, the sense of well-being goes down and down, and it troughs at about 55. And so if you think for a moment, you know, you're really dealing in your 30s, up to the 50s with trying to get a career going. Am I going to make it? Am I not going to make it? You get married, you have kids, your kids have problems, you've got aging parents. So about 55, I think, is the worst quality of life, or if you will, or the most stressors that they found. And these are gigantic data sets, so we're not talking a few people. But if you think about it, you can kind of understand why that's midlife crisis. Is it going to get any better? Or if you think it's bad at 55, oh my God, what's it going to be at 75? Now the paradox is, and why this is exciting and why people should know about it, is that we begin to see that quality, that well-being, going up from about 55 on up, even into the 80s. So it does not get worse. And the fascinating thing is why, given that there's more illness, given that old age has its disabilities, why would the quality of life and satisfaction go up? And so the explanations are two. One is from sociology that suggests that when we begin to move towards 60, we finally begin to say, well, I guess my life is finite. I guess I'll be like all the other biological creatures and we'll finally die. We don't really believe that until we face illness oftentimes, like cancer. But when you do that, then you begin to say, look, maybe I'd better enjoy life now because I don't know how long it'll last. And so people, older people say, I live in the now. You know, I don't worry about 3 or 4 weeks from now. I'm enjoying each day. I wake up to enjoy the sunrise. I enjoy seeing I love to hear the birds chirping outside the early morning in the country. These kind of things you're a little bit too busy to deal with when you're younger. But as you get older, you say, gee, these are important. My grandkids are important. I better heal that old problem I had with X person. There's a sense that you better be helping towards the next generation. So what do they need? What do you want to pass on? What are the values that you cherish so much that you want to be sure that we're going to stay around after you're gone? So these are the kind of things, these are the way thinking changes, and that may then give you a better sense of well-being, a better sense that life's pretty good. You begin to see, you begin to be grateful. You have a gratitude for your living, for the good things, for all the blessings that you have, not just the problems. So we think that's it. Now, the interesting that we think is sociological, that the reason that it's called a paradox of the U-bin, that's I've just described a U that goes from the top on the left all the way down and comes back up on the old age. But the interesting thing is that there's data from studies of chimpanzees and primates that this U-bend looks as if it occurs in primates as well as humans. So that suggests there may be something more biological. I guess if you think of looking at an old gorilla someplace or an old chimpanzee, they're kind of quieter, a little more mature, a little more modulating their emotions like people do when they get older. And so there may be something biological that has something to do with evolutionary issues, but that's fascinating. So if anything people remember, I hope you'll remember the paradox of the U-bin, which is this interesting U shape by decades that we see in terms of how people perceive aging.
Well, you know, it certainly does open up the opportunity to look forward to and experience more joy in the moment as
right.
You really describe how the change really begins to shift.
Right, and I think it also helps people at 50 to say, my God, it's not – 50, you think if it's this bad, I'll never make it. But to understand it's going to get better. That's very – seems to me a reason for optimism when you're in the trough.
Absolutely. Dr. Holland.
We had a woman who said, you know, I'm not just in the sandwich generation. I'm a panini.
Dr. Holland, we're going to stop and take just a break. But when we come back,
okay.
I'd like to talk more about character and character strength. So we'll return in just a moment. Dr. Holland, you reference character strengths in the title of Lighter mm-hmm. as We Go. So let's start with defining what exactly do you mean by character?
Good. Well, I got interested in, first in medicine, but then as I did internship and saw people with illness coping with it, I began to be quite interested in how do people, healthy, psychologically healthy people, cope with catastrophic things that happen to them, like a terrible accident, or when we studied people with polio who were paralyzed from the neck down from polio back in the days, the 50s. So how does somebody deal with all that? And so that kind of resonated in the 1990s as I began to see our field of psychiatry and psychology become more interested in people's positive attributes. Up to then, we've been really much more interested in the negative things about people, all their flaws and psychological problems, and the field has been obsessed with those, and we never stopped to look at what are the positive things that let people survive to 88 in pretty good shape and with their heads still put together. So I got very interested in what are those qualities that let you cope all the way through your life. And so the field of positive psychology evolved in the late 1990s. And the group out of Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, put together a consortium to look at all the great religions and the great philosophies over the millennia to look at what are the characteristics of people, personality, that one would call positive, or one would call these attributes that help us to survive, not negative ones, but what are the positive ones? And it's interesting. They looked at Judeo-Christian Confucianism. That's a wonderful 2-year review. And they found about 20, if they called out all of the positive qualities, they found about 21 that crossed all these religions. And they could then boil them down to just a few, which interestingly to me turned out to be the same virtues, what the Greeks call virtues, the positive things about people that the Greeks said led to the good life. So what are those things? Well, first of all, it's courage. It takes a certain amount of courage to change anything about yourself. Concern for your fellow man, humanity, concern, self-moderation, being able to control your bodily appetites for eating and drinking and sex, a sense of justice, a sense of being fair, and a ability to be a part of something bigger than yourself, to be a part of something you value and think's important. And then all of that kind of contributes to what I think is a kind of wisdom that comes from experience and aging, and all of it put together sort of contribute to what I would call the wisdom that comes with aging. So those are the what we call positive characteristics, or the Greeks call the virtues. So, you know, the bottom line is there's nothing new under the sun. These have been observed, and I think emotions don't change. The things people have to cope with change over each generation, but what the equipment is and what we have to cope with it, it doesn't change. The human emotions, the demons, the bad parts, but the good parts are all there. And that, to me, is kind of reassuring that, you know, we the more we change, the more we stay the same. But those emotions we know about, we can build on those positive ones, and that's what we do when we deal with people who are older and we're facing depression or problems or illness. We sort of look at, well, I know there's a bunch of things you can't do, but what can you still do? How can we build on the what you have around you? Certainly loneliness is a big thing we have to build on with older people. So there are problems. I'm not being Pollyanna at all, but with the idea that we do have skills and character strengths that see us through or sustain us for our whole life. So I think often older people appreciate hearing that about themselves because, you know, by and large, we think we're not very smart and not very, very good at doing things. But if you sort of point out to people how they've coped many years with a lot of adverse events and they're still coping, it gives them a kind of strength that seems to be helpful.
And you also make the distinction between wisdom and knowledge. What's the difference,
right,
from your perspective?
Well, I think knowledge really is really information that you carry around. But I think wisdom is taking that information and amalgamating it with personal experience, with judgment, if you will, with a sense of having, of tolerance. Wisdom is a very complex topic. It's complex and it's hard to measure, but there's been a lot of research, still research going on what is wisdom and how do we acquire it. So it's a complex issue, but I think it's a mix of personal experience and worldview and information and knowledge.
You also refer to the concept of temperance, which is mm-hmm. not a word we hear very often nowadays, and it's
right.
certainly not a concept that seems to hold the value that it once did.
Well, you know, I think we're missing the boat on this, because the word temperance usually, you know, brings up thoughts of prohibition, but the way it is used in terms of the character strengths is the ability to modulate your bodily needs. And so if you look around right now, obesity, alcoholism, substance abuse, these are really signs that we are not managing our self needs very well. And we're creating illnesses in ourselves. We're creating chronic diseases that begin to appear earlier, like diabetes, heart disease, stroke, and maybe even cancer. So the health habits have a lot to do with preventing those things appearing earlier in life. So I think temperance is enormously important in our culture. Temperance also deals with greed. You know, we see an awful lot of greed in our society in terms of corruption and people who want more and more money and do less and less. So I think, Pamela, we miss the boat when we don't recognize how important being able to modulate our needs so our weight stays appropriate, so we're exercising appropriately, so our alcohol is social drinking and doesn't get out of hand. These are big issues that get not thought about in terms of temperance, but I think it's how we are able to keep ourselves in tow in terms of our addictions, problems that plague us in this culture today.
And certainly, as if we have a negative thought about aging, temperance mm-hmm. is something that is a lot more of a challenge to engage in. If you're feeling depressed, if you're feeling like you're sort of at the end of your days,
mm-hmm.
why exercise? Why not drink a lot? Why not eat a lot? So it really, again, goes back to the importance and the value of looking at your life from a broader perspective than life is over at 21.
Right. Right, and I think being grateful for the things you have. You know, most of us have got a roof over our head and three meals a day and friends and family. And so if you can stop and kind of count your blessings and appreciate them and even say it and show to people how much you are grateful for them, I think those kind of behaviors are self-fulfilling, because others appreciate it then, and you get a kind of ripple effect from it.
You and your colleague, Mindy Greenstein, talk about her experience with being in treatment for stage 2 breast cancer. And you talk about the value mm-hmm. of humor.
Mm-hmm.
How does one match humor
I think that's a very critical virtue, critical characteristic if you have it, and most people are able to exercise it maybe with a wry humor, but being able to laugh at something that isn't funny at all, or that you couldn't deal with, you know, like you're walking around slow, or you're walking in your walker, if you can joke about it a little bit and laugh about it rather than being sad, that clearly helps. Mindy is in her 50s and has had to deal with breast cancer, and the interesting issue is that when you have had cancer, you have this almost the same worldview that I've just been describing for older people. The worldview being, I don't know how long I'll live with this. I now have had a disease that might take my life. How do I want to live the rest of my life? What is really important to me? How am I going to do what really makes the most sense, which I think Mindy describes very well, happening to her in her 50s. It's exactly the same thing we're seeing when we get older and we realize that life is now limited. We're not going to live forever. Maybe we'll make it to 80 or 90, but, you know, you never know that either. So how do I make the most meaning out of whatever time I have left? So there's a very interesting similarity between the two. And Mindy's courageous and doing very well, and she laughs a lot, and we have a lot of humor in our dealings. We're working on putting some of these ideas into a game so we could sit down with somebody who's older, who's kind of isolated, and come up with some of these quotes like older people are an increasing natural resource and that kind of thing, and help them bring up memories from the past, tell me what your grandma taught you, and begin to get dialogue with these people who are somewhat older and somewhat isolated, and maybe our real goal is to get younger people talking to older people. So we're working on that as an outcome of the book.
Well, the
book began.
That actually sounds like a wonderful idea. It sounds like it would be so helpful in so many different medical environments, as well as folks at home trying to grow themselves.
I think it would. I think it'd be helpful in assisted living places.
Absolutely.
Maybe senior centers. Too. So we're working on it. I think it could be a fun thing to make dialogue a little, to break the ice when you find you don't quite know what to say to somebody. We give you a kind of way to start a conversation. That's what we hope.
It sounds like a wonderful idea. What is the we've been talking about aging and old age and youth. What exactly is old age? Is there a magic number?
It's 10 years older than you are. It's always, you put it off another 10. Oh, I'm not really old yet. I'm only 40, 50 is when you get old. So I think it's pretty arbitrary. What has happened is that people are arriving at older ages in very good health. And so, you know, they will say that the 80 is really 60 now and so on. Because I think we're arriving at older age much healthier, much more functional, and living longer. So there's a real extension of this period from, let's say, 60s through, it looks like, 100. More people are living to be centenarians. In Japan, they apparently used to give a silver bowl to all the people who got to be 100. Now there's so many they're now making a ceramic bowl. So it's the same thing's happening here. It's we got a lot of people living to 100. So things are changing, no question. And so the real issue, and I'm about to go to a meeting sponsored by Davos and the World Economic Council on how do we make this change work for us. Here's a big group of people who could be helpful in the workforce. How do you keep them in productive, functional? How do you keep them healthy? So the academic community, the business community, are all looking at this problem, because we are having a doubling in this country of, by 2020, we'll have, by 2030, we'll have a doubling from about 10% of the population to about 20% of the population. We'll be over 65. So it's a big economic issue as well as social. I think that there is a lot of tension coming to aging, and that's a good thing.
That's an excellent thing, and certainly one of the things that really, I think, is harmful to many people. If they've been in a career for, maybe they've been in a career for 30 years, maybe they've been in a career for 3 years, but at some point, based on their age, and it's usually in the 60s, they are expected to retire. They are expected to be finished with their work life and not so healthy.
No, you're so right. And that in Europe, that's still very much the rule. In this country, more and more places are not, you know, letting people go at 65, but they're allowing them, as I've been able to stay on at Memorial into the latter years, and I think we still have things to offer. I think there's for a long time was a sense that you should not keep working because you're taking the place of somebody younger. But there's much more exploration of how do you, that young people bring a lot to the workplace, but older people do too. So how do you keep this kind of mix of younger and older contributing each in their own more special ways? There's a big, big push to understand the workplace better, to understand how do we devise urban living better to meet the age of older people. So I think that I think the next decade or so we're going to see quite a lot of changes, and I hope appreciation of older people, because it's not scary to be old. It's kind of a good time to look forward to when you can do some of the things that you couldn't do when you were younger and you had all your kids to take care of and so on. So so if we can begin to change some of those attitudes, particularly of younger people, and begin to get them interacting with some older people so they see it's not all disability and death. Here's different people doing different things. You begin maybe to remove some of that myth and that old age doesn't mean death. And by the way, I think the word aging, you know, really, aging, if you use the word aging, it scares people. If you use the word living, that's really what we're doing. And aging is really just plain old living every day. So forget the word aging and revert to the word living. It changes attitudes a lot.
Absolutely. I mean, even as you replace the word aging with living as we're talking, you know, it's just a different energy that you
That's
sort
right.
of put
and
out
yet
into
it's
the room.
One day at a time, every day.
There you go. So I guess old age is only as awful as you make it, and you can make it different.
Right. You're so right. You can make it terrible and anticipate it with great horror, and it doesn't help you any. It doesn't help the living or help your at the present or help you later either.
All right, we're going to take a break in just a moment. But, you know, we've been talking about the positive aspects of living. But there are certainly, as we know, and as you alluded to a little bit ago, those folks who, as their chronological numbers increase, find themselves
right.
feeling more lonely, more isolated,
right.
Losing friends, losing loved ones, losing spouses.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to take a break, but when we come
we'll
back, I'd like to talk about that. All
right.
That's
fine. We'll talk about that. Sure. I'm happy to. Right.
Excellent.
Okay.
All right. Folks,
okay.
This is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk and a conversation that I am having with Dr. Jimmy Holland, who is the co-author with Dr. Mindy Greenstein, or Greenstein, I'm not sure which it is, of Lighter As We Go, Virtues, Character, Strengths, and Aging, which we're now changing to Virtues, Character, Strengths, and Living. We'll be right back. Dr. Holland, let's talk about the experience of being alone as one's numbers increase. How do you counsel those who are 70, 80, 90 and are feeling very much isolated?
Well, you've hit on one of the probably cardinal negatives of aging, and that is loneliness, of being kind of left with spouse gone, friends have died. It's very sad. I myself realize, you know, I have probably one person who I can recall my childhood with now. That's very sad when you remember all the people who were there and you shared it with in the past. So loneliness is indeed a big issue. And how to combat that? Sometimes loneliness is accompanied by depression. And so we have a big effort here in our group to deal with depression in older people. And, for example, we have a telephone intervention that we have tested here. And with about 5 calls made over about 6 weeks, we can really help people with kind of problem solving, thinking through what are the positives that they do, what can they do now. And the telephone we chose because people do have trouble getting in. They're older, oftentimes disabled in some way. So we have developed a 5-session telephone intervention that reduces loneliness, depression, anxiety, and helps them problem solve and find more meaning in their life. So we think this is useful, and we're going to give it to one of the telephone helplines. I think it could be very helpful in using it in the helplines that people call in for, and they could receive this intervention free. In addition, I've developed what I've called a vintage readers book club. Vintage meaning we're all older, but we're also reading some of the classics. So we read what people want, but we started with reading the Harvard 5-foot classics because of the Western world's marvelous civilizations, great books. And actually, I found I had a group that was going, and we developed the book club. People suddenly got furious, and what's going on, you know, outside as myself? What was things like with Cicero in 44 B.C.? Begin to think a little bit more about the universals of life and humanity rather than so much their own symptoms and their own problems and their own little circle. So we found the book club is a very good thing. People can call in if they can't come in. Some people, they all want to get the monthly readings, so we send out in a big font readings once a month. So I think there are interventions. Depression is a big thing, a big problem in older people. Suicide, pretty high in older, particularly older white men. So these are hazards of aging that fall within the area of, you know, major psychiatric problems. We need more people specializing in problems of older people. We don't have a lot of people going into geriatrics, and yet the aging population is increasing and is going to need a lot of medical care for chronic illness as well as chronic mental problems like depression. So we are facing, it's been called the silver tsunami is coming. We're going to have older people hitting the healthcare system without the kind of numbers of staff and people to take care of them that we're going to need. So there's a lot of concern that you're right, Pamela, that be questioning, well, how are we doing with older people? I think we're doing a better job with treating diabetes and recognizing how self-management is important and how treating people who are depressed who have diabetes makes a big difference. Treating people with heart disease, we're doing a better job with these chronic illnesses, but they're going to be coin of the realm pretty soon. And I'm pleased to see that I think the healthcare system is recognizing the problem, not yet increasing the healthcare professionals very much, which is going to have to come, but facing it a little more, acknowledging the problems. So it's a resource. It's good. It's a whole new level of people who are available for some work in the workforce, and certainly available as consumers in the economy. So we just have to deal with them. We have to deal with the fact it's here.
I'm really fascinated by the 5-session phone module that you talked about. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Sure, I mean, I'm happy to. We developed it for people who are getting chemotherapy, who are older and are going, regularly in for chemotherapy, and that's can be arduous if you have prostate cancer, breast, colon. We developed it for cancer, but I don't think it's only deals with cancer. And I really came about because I was part of a study in which we simply called people once a month, just asking them how they were functioning, what was your level of well-being. And what we found was that the call made an enormous difference. They felt better, less depressed, less anxious. And when we asked them why, they said, because somebody cared about me between my visits to the oncologist. So, I thought, this is not rocket science. If we can do that much with a simple phone call, then if we really intervene with 5 sessions, we'll do a lot more. So we're thinking this is going to be helpful. Very much looking forward to getting it used more widely.
And when you say we, you're referring to your colleagues at Memorial?
We have a little group here at Memorial, yes. Okay. We've done it all together. Mindy's part of that group, and Mindy and I are part of the group. The geriatric psychiatry research group.
The idea that as you pursue aging, as you engage in aging, that you can have a full, vibrant, amazing life. Do you find people are fighting against that concept? Do you find professionals fighting against that concept? Or do you feel as though it's being embraced?
I think people are learning more about aging, and I think they're developing a little bit more of an open mind, and they're reducing some of the long-held prejudices. There are prejudices out there. You're just old, you might as well give up and don't bother to try to change very much. I think that's changing, Pam, in a good way, and I'm optimistic that if we can get the young people, that's where I really think that's where the change could come. If we can get them understanding things are not so bad, okay? That would make a big difference.
I think it would make a huge difference. You talk about courage as well in the book, and you give the example of a 6-year-old child named Ruby Bridges as an example of courage. Can you tell us a little bit about Ruby?
Well, I guess you're too young to maybe remember it, but in the old civil rights issues, and those were coming up hot and heavy, one of the schools in Louisiana was desegregated, and the parents all kept their children home, and this little girl, Ruby, was carried and taken to school by the sheriff's office and federal agents every day for a year, and she was the only child in that school. And she was remarkable that this youngster was able. Norman Rockwell did a picture, and we put the picture. He did a painting of it.
Yes.
She was a tremendous little girl, and she went to school totally alone every day with people jeering at her outside and making awful comments. And when it was over, and this friend of mine was a psychiatrist who talked with her, and she said, well, I would listen to them, but I would just pray to God that God would forgive them for what they were doing if they didn't understand. Such a wonderful, so that you can be courageous at all ages.
It really is an important story, and yes, you can be courageous at all ages. You can be courageous at 6, you can be courageous at 60, you can
sure.
be courageous at
right.
at 100.
Right. And each age group has its own, challenges, and it takes courage to get through them.
Does it take courage to approach aging, we've now renamed it living, from a positive perspective? There's so much help in our society to look at aging with fear and horror.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it does take courage, and I think it takes courage to speak out and say, look, you got the wrong ideas, let's change them. So we need more people. There's this committee that's been worldwide coming out of Davos. We have New York, a kind of consortium from the city of New York calling New York City Age Friendly. So it's bringing together people from the business and all sectors to kind of look at the issues. So I think you're seeing that in some of the bigger cities to really look at aging as a positive, which it is, not a negative, and to bring society's views around to be compatible with that.
Certainly, what we've been talking about in a lot of ways, without using the word discrimination, is the existence and the impact of age discrimination over many people. What are your thoughts about the way in which we as a society think about the fact of age discrimination, which is technically illegal, but so are a lot of things.
Still there.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, I think we've seen that particularly in the economic slowdown we've had, where people 50-ish to 65 have had a lot of trouble getting jobs. So it still exists. It's a problem. It is a problem. I think that we have made progress in terms of not demanding that people retire at 65 in this country, and that seems to have gone relatively well. But I think that there are still subtle ways in which we discriminate against people who are older. And, you know, they just got to continue to be acknowledged and probably, you know, sometimes it may lead to legal suits, but that probably has to be too. But I think that overall things have moved in the direction of more tolerance towards old age than we saw in the past.
Mm-hmm. When folks retire, is it that many folks nowadays are talking about post-retirement, what they want to do, what their next job is going to be, what their next career path will be. And then, of course, there are those who retire and say, you know what, I just want to have a good time. Do you have a recommendation one way or the other?
Yes, I think that, you know, there are people who just spend their working productive years waiting for retirement to come, and then often the day it comes and that day after they're bored stiff. So I say to people, be sure you have something that's as meaningful as your work that you're going to go do. If you love photography, fantastic, but don't hang up your working shoes until you've got some sense that you know things that are going to be exciting and interesting and keep you involved. Some people seem to retire to golf in Florida. I think that's less common today than it was for a while. But if you people look forward less to retirement as a playtime than they used to, and there's also economic needs. Seems like people need to work longer in terms of having enough money to get along.
I'm curious. We started the program and we identified the fact that you yourself are 88. Thinking about retiring anytime soon, maybe by the time you're 100, or what are your thoughts?
When I stop having fun, I plan to retire. I haven't come close to that yet. people say, how can I say I have fun working at Memorial Sloan Kettering? But I love every day. Every day's different. I love working with people, with the research, with the thinking new ideas. So I'm having fun. So I'll let you know. I think I'm not having fun.
I will not wait for the phone call. I think I'll be waiting a very long time.
I hope so. Take care.
Dr. Jimmy Holland, co-author with Mindy Greenstein of Lighter As We Go, Virtues, Character, Strengths, and Aging. Dr. Holland, is there a website for the book?
Yes, there is. It's the livinglighter.com, I think. That's close.
That sounds good. People can research that.
Yeah.
For those who are listening who have really been inspired by what you have been sharing today, is there a first step that you would recommend, or a second or third step you'd like to see people begin to take as they revisit their own personal views on aging?
Well, I think it's helpful to reflect on self a little bit and appreciate oneself. I think we too often don't appreciate our strengths, and that we don't tell somebody else that we're talking with their strengths. It's very useful to get reminded, you know, you really look at all the adversity you faced for 75 years and look, you're still going strong. Those are very helpful things to people at any age, you know, but I think particularly for older people. If you're feeling lonely and lonesome and so on, then certainly talking with a counselor or your physician, or it makes a lot of sense.
All right. Dr. Jimmy Holland, thank you so much for joining us today on Mind Talk.
Thank you, Pamela. Take care.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Take care. And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a licensed medical, mental health, or other professional. You can listen to Mind Talk. You can listen to this program and all Mind Talk programs on demand by going to mindtalk.org. That's mindtalk.org. The managing producer is Jim Brown in 26 by 2 Communications. You are encouraged to send your questions or comments to me at pamela@mindtalk.org. That's P-A-M-E-L-A at mindtalk.org. And let me just share with you again the full title of the book and the conversation that we've been having today with co-author Dr. Jimmy Holland, Lighter as We Go, Virtues, Character Strengths, and Aging. I am hopeful that you will share this conversation with everyone in your life that you care about who may in fact be getting a little bit older, which of course is all of us. Thank you again for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. And please remember, if it's unacceptable, it's unacceptable. You take care.